Good morning. Hope that everyone is doing well this morning. This morning we're going to begin a new series for the first part of 2017. So if you have a Bible with you, you can turn to Genesis chapter 12. That's where we're going to begin our study this morning, Genesis chapter 12. If you don't have a Bible, there should be one in the racks in front of you. If not, we'll put all the scriptures up on the screen. But Genesis chapter 12 is where we're going to begin this new series, which I have creatively titled Abraham, because we're going to be talking about a guy named Abraham. Now, Abraham is a man whose name appears all throughout the Bible, who actually lived in ancient Mesopotamia about 4,000 years ago. And if you're anything like me, the first question that pops into my mind is, what in the world does a 4,000-year-old Mesopotamian man have to do with me? Why should we spend a bunch of time talking about this guy, Abraham? Why does he matter so much? What's the big deal with Abraham? Because if you're like me, then I have this tendency to be drawn to things that are new and then dismiss things that are old. Like every time a new iPhone comes out, immediately my current iPhone seems old and I need to replace it. So there's this thing inside of me that's so attracted to what is new that I pay less and less attention to what seems old. And then when you tell me that there's a guy named Abraham who lived 4,000 years ago in a place that I've never been to, I automatically think old, old, old. Not to mention that all of the information about this guy, Abraham, is found in the Old Testament. Maybe for some of us, when it comes to the Bible, we think, why should we read the Old Testament if we have a new one? Well, in the New Testament, Jesus says this. In the book of Matthew, he says, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them." Now here, when Jesus says the law and the prophets, what he's talking about, he is referring to all of the writings that we now refer to as the Old Testament. So Jesus is teaching us here that he didn't come to abolish the Old Testament. He didn't come to get rid of it. He didn't come to dismiss the Old Testament. Jesus says that he came to fulfill the Old Testament. Now, fulfilling is way different than abolishing. Abolishing is out with the old, in with the new. Abolishing is thinking we don't need the Old Testament anymore because we have the New Testament. And when we have something new, we no longer have need for the old. Like when I get my new phone, I abolish the old phone. But Jesus says that's not how it works with the Bible. Jesus says that he came to fulfill the Old Testament. And fulfill means to complete, to conclude, to finish the story. Jesus says that when it comes to knowing God, we will never be able to understand him unless we get the whole story, both the old and the new. Several years ago, there was a movie that came out that I wanted to see, so I waited for it to come out on the movie channels, then I set up my DVR to record it. And when I finally got around to watching the movie, I sat down and watched it, and when I got to the very end, right when the closing credits were rolling, the recording cut out because I didn't have enough space in my DVR. And since it was at the closing credits, I thought, okay, whatever, I saw the whole movie. But then when I started listening to how people were talking about that movie, they were talking about it way different than I remember seeing the movie. So after a couple of weeks, I decided, you know what, I need to see what happened here. And I went and I made some space on my DVR and I re-recorded it again. And this time, I watched it all the way through everything, only to find that in the middle of the closing credits, the main character who I thought was dead was shown to be alive again, and it changed the meaning of the whole movie. Now, I'm not going to tell you what the name of the movie is because I don't want to spoil it for you, but I want to know why there isn't a rule that says in all movies, the closing credits happen at the close of the movie. You can't put the major plot twist in the closing credits. That's just dumb. But this movie taught me that you can't understand unless you get the whole story, right? And when it comes to the story of God, we're not going to fully understand who God is or what God is doing right now unless we understand what God has done before. We won't understand the New Testament unless we understand the Old Testament. And when we dig around and begin to read in the Old Testament, what we find is not simply a bunch of rules and facts. The Bible isn't a textbook or a user's manual. What we find is a collection of stories about God's interactions with real people. And through these interactions with people, God shows us who he is and what he's like. God shows us who we are and what we are like. And then God shows us how he relates to people like us. So it seems that God has chosen to show the world who he is through people. And there are certain people throughout history that God has used in very specific ways to show us very specific things about God. And one of these people is a guy named Abraham. Have you ever noticed in the Bible that God frequently introduces himself like this? He says, "I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." Have you seen this before? Dozens and dozens of times throughout the Bible, God associates himself with specific people. And these associations, they mean something, but we can't know what they mean until we first understand these specific people. So can't you see here that what God is saying is, hey, if you want to know me, then you need to get to know these guys. In the book of 1 Corinthians, Paul writes, "Now these things happened to them as an example, but they were written down for our instruction." And what Paul is referring to here are the interactions that God had with people long before us. Interactions that were recorded in the Bible. And Paul tells us that the reason that these interactions were recorded was for our instruction today. So Paul is telling us that when we look at people like Abraham, we do this so that we will be instructed right now. Do you see that? So to answer my own question, what does a guy named Abraham who lived 4,000 years ago have to do with us today? Well, one answer would be that God went to great lengths to make sure that his interactions with Abraham were recorded and passed down to people like us so that we could be instructed by them right now. So over the next several weeks, as we study the life of Abraham, our instruction can be summarized in three questions that I want us to ask ourselves every single week. And these three questions are, what does this teach us about God? What does this teach us about ourselves? And what does this teach us about how God relates to people like us? You see that? Every week we're going to ask ourselves these questions in this series. So that was my introduction to this series on Abraham. Now let's talk about this guy, Abraham. And when it comes to Abraham, we can't really talk about him or understand him until we first understand the world that Abraham was a part of. So let me give you a quick summary of everything that happened before Abraham. In the book of Genesis, the very first book of the Bible, this is like God's introduction to the world. And in Genesis chapter 1, we read, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth and all that was in them." And then in Genesis chapter 2, God creates man and woman, otherwise known as Adam and Eve. And it only took Adam and Eve all of one chapter to ruin everything, because by Genesis chapter 3, Adam and Eve disobeyed God and sin entered the world. And before we begin to think that, you know, be too harsh with Adam and Eve and think, "Thanks a lot, guys, you ruined it for all of us," I believe that we could have subbed any one of us with Adam or Eve and gotten the same result. Because I don't know about you, but if you look at my life, there is nothing in my life that would inspire any confidence to assume that I wouldn't have disobeyed God just like they did. So if we read Genesis chapter 3 and it was Dusty and Eve in the garden, we would have gotten the same exact result. But when sin entered the world in Genesis chapter 3, it began to spread like wildfire. And we begin to see this in that Adam and Eve's oldest son, Cain, killed his younger brother, Abel, out of jealousy and resentment. And then things began to only get worse from here. Only a few chapters after Adam and Eve, it says in Genesis chapter 6, that the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. So you see, in just 6 chapters in Genesis, mankind, in their sin, has completely turned their back on God, and wickedness and evil is everywhere, to the point where God decided that he needed to put an end to all of this, so he decided that he's going to flood the whole earth. But before God did this, he spared one remaining faithful family, and that is the family of who? Noah. You guys are so much better than the first service, but don't tell them that. So there's Noah, The family of Noah, God tells Noah to build an ark. God floods the world. Noah's family survives. And then mankind, through Noah, gets a reset. That's Genesis chapter 9. But then in Genesis chapter 11, just two chapters later, just a few generations after Noah, mankind reverts to its old ways again. Everybody once again turns away from God in disobedience and rebellion, and this rebellion is most clearly seen in the building of the Tower of Babel. Remember hearing this story, the Tower of Babel, Genesis chapter 11? What happened is that all the people in the world, not only did they rebel against God, but they started rubbing their rebellion in God's face. They all together decided, hey, let's build a tower that reaches to the heavens. And the kind of tower that they were building is not the same kind of tower that you and I think of, because back then, these towers, they were built to honor the idols that they worshipped. So this Tower of Babel was a declaration by the people to God that we do not worship you. Talk about a slap in the face, right? And while this is going on, the one family line who has been faithful to God is starting to falter as well. As the world is getting more and more evil again, there is one family line, the descendants of a guy named Shem, whose family has been faithful to God, but after a few generations, even they are succumbing to the world around them. At the end of Genesis chapter 11, we are introduced to one of these descendants of Shem named Terah, who is the father of Abram, whom we now know as Abraham. Genesis chapter 11 is where we finally meet Abraham, and he is first mentioned like this. Genesis 11 verse 28 says, "Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah fathered Abram, Nahor, and Haran in Ur of the Chaldeans." Now this verse right here is telling us a whole bunch about the sad state of things. This place where Abraham is from, it's called Ur of the Chaldeans. And Ur was a well-known city, and it was most well-known for its idol worship. The city of Ur was the center for worship of the moon god. And not only was Abraham born into a city that was famous for worshiping the moon rather than worshiping God, it appears that Abraham's family took part in this as well. Abraham's father, his name was Terah. The word Terah literally means moon, which means somewhere along the way, Abraham's family got mixed up in this idol worship, so mixed up that they even started naming their children after the idols that they worshipped. Joshua chapter 24 backs this up when it says, "Long ago your fathers lived beyond the Euphrates, Terah, the father of Abraham and Nahor, and they served other gods." Now to make matters worse, in Genesis, one of the very first details that is included about Abraham is this. Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and Sarai was barren. She had no child. So when we finally meet Abraham in the Bible, things are looking pretty grim. Everybody has turned away from God and started worshiping idols. Even the one family line that had been faithful to God in the past, they have now started worshiping idols as well. And this formerly faithful family line is now in jeopardy because Abraham cannot produce an offspring. So if I were to summarize the world that Abraham was a part of, I might summarize it like this. What a mess. Now, if I were in God's shoes, looking at a mess like this, I would be like, geez, forget these guys. I mean, they rebel, they disobey, they never listen to me, and now they're going to rub it in my face? If it were me, if I were in God's shoes, I would be done with all of them. If it were me, I would say, hey, you guys got yourself into this mess. Good luck getting yourself out of it. I'm done with all of you. That's how I would do it, because that is what I do. It's one thing to try to clean up a mess that I created, but it's a totally different thing to try to clean up a mess that somebody else is responsible for. For instance, I'm 35 years old, I don't have any kids, and because of that, I have never changed a single diaper in my entire life. because I don't clean up messes that I didn't create. And the story of Abraham begins in a giant mess that they created. A mess that God had nothing to do with. In fact, God had every right to leave them in their mess. But instead, here is what God decides to do. Genesis chapter 12 records the very first interaction that God has with Abraham, and it begins like this. Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation. And I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So what we're seeing here is that in the middle of the mess, God comes to Abraham. Do you see that? Now, I want you to notice, did Abraham do anything to earn God's favor? No, nothing. Joshua actually tells us that Abraham was an idol-worshipping mess maker just like everybody else. And rather than leaving him in his own mess, God came into the mess. And God didn't come into Abraham's mess to give him a lecture. God didn't come into Abraham's mess to rub it in his face. God didn't come into the mess that Abraham had made to bring up every little messy detail of Abraham's life. That's the kind of things that you and I do. But what God did is that God came right into Abraham's messy life and he blessed him. Do you see that? Now this right here should teach us something really, really important about what God is like. Unlike you and I, who typically won't have anything to do with the mess that we were not responsible for, God doesn't avoid our messes. He wades right into the middle of them to reach people like you and me and Abraham. Now, this should be particularly good news for people like you and me, because although I don't typically clean up messes that I didn't create, I create plenty of messes all by myself. If your life is anything like mine, then I have a long history of messes that I've created through my own rebellion, selfishness, and stubbornness. Does anybody have life experience like that? And when facing my own messes, sometimes I get this thought in my head, that God won't have anything to do with somebody like me until I clean up this mess. So I start working really, really hard to clean up the mess, or to hide the mess, or I just quit and assume that I am a lost cause because of this mess in my life. But the God of Abraham, he walked right into the middle of the mess. And it seems before Abraham even acknowledged his own mess, before he even tried to clean it up, before he even asked God about his mess, God came into the mess. And right in the middle of Abraham's mess, we learn that Abraham, the God of Abraham, he also comes into the messy lives of you and I. Romans tells us, "For while we were still weak, at the right time Christ died for the ungodly. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person one would dare even to die. But God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." The same God. The same God who reached out to Abraham is the same God who reaches out to every one of us. Because even while you and I were turning our back on God, he came to get us by sending Jesus into our mess. So the first thing that I want us to see about God through the life of Abraham is this: God doesn't avoid messy people. Does everybody see this? This is what the God of Abraham is like. Now, what we see here in this interaction with Abraham is that God made the first move. And right out of the gate, before we even hear a single word from Abraham, before Abraham even has a chance to respond in any way, God not only comes into the mess, but God begins to make promises to Abraham. Take a look. He says, first promise, "I will make of you a great nation." He gives him a second promise and says, "I will bless you and make your name great, Abraham. And then he gives him a third promise and says, in you, all of the families of the earth shall be blessed. Do you see these promises? Now, these promises right here, they're going to come up for the rest of Abraham's life and the rest of our series in this study of Abraham. And they're going to be a reoccurring thing that we're going to go into detail later. But for today, what I want us to notice is that the God of Abraham is a promise maker. Before Abraham does anything, God comes into his mess and makes him some promises. Now, we live in a world where people make promises all the time. So we aren't impressed with promise makers. What impresses us, what stands out in our world, are the promise keepers. Now, real quick, before we started this study today, let me know, how many of you have heard of this person, Abraham, before today? Raise your hand. If you don't do this, it's not going to work. All right, look at this. This is about every single one of us. So this guy, Abraham, lived 4,000 years ago in a place that almost all of us have never been before, yet every single one of us knows who the name of Abraham is. Isn't that true? And did you know this? That even in Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, the name of Abraham is great for every one of them. That makes up most of the people in all of the world. So I would say that this promise that he was going to make Abraham's name great, I would consider that promise kept, wouldn't you? Also, it says that God made him a promise. He says that he promised that he was going to bless all of the families of the world through Abraham. And every Christmas, we get together to celebrate, because we celebrate the birth of Jesus, because in Jesus we know that it is through Jesus that God accepts and forgives everybody in the whole world. And I would call that a blessing. That through Jesus, if you put your faith in him, you will be part of God's family. That's a blessing. And the fact that Jesus is a blessing to us is another promise that was kept by God. Because when Jesus was born, Matthew made it very clear that he wanted us to know that Jesus, this Jesus, he is an offspring of Abraham. So I think it's very important for us to point out at the beginning of this study of Abraham that God, his interactions with Abraham, they center greatly on the promises, not only that he made with Abraham, but he also kept. So we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the promises of God here. But in this first interaction, what I want everybody to see, what we learn about God is this. The God of Abraham makes and keeps his promises. You see that? Now the last thing that I want to look at in this first interaction is the part of the interaction where Abraham is called to do something. The first thing that God actually says to Abraham is this. He says, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. Now, to many of us, this might not seem like that big of a deal, because the world that we live in today is much smaller than it was back then. Today, people come and go and leave and return all the time. In fact, you can leave today, fly to San Francisco, visit the Golden Gate Bridge, come right back to Pittsburgh in the same day. But in Abraham's day, people didn't just pick up and go anywhere. Most people were born, lived, and died in the land of their fathers or not very far from it. And if people were to go anywhere, it would be for very clear and very specific reasons. But here, Abraham is being called by God to go without any of the details in advance. So if Abraham were to ask the questions, well, wait a minute, where are we going to go? God's answer was going to be, I will show you. To which my next question would be, when are you going to show me? Because in my life, I don't typically act without first gathering a bunch of information. Especially if the action that I'm about to do is in any way risky or difficult or uncomfortable. In fact, in my own life, a lot of my prayers are cleverly worded requests for unlimited comfort and the ability to know the future before it happens. Like if you were to write down my prayers and cut out all the big words and the flowery language, what you'd be left with is something like this. God, take away everything in my life that is difficult, painful, or uncomfortable. And if you won't do that, please let me know exactly how everything's going to end up so I never have any fear, worry, or stress. Your friend Dusty. Any of your prayers sound like that? I'm sure Abraham could relate, because what God was asking Abraham to do here was risky and difficult and uncomfortable. Because what God is essentially asking Abraham to do is to make a break from a bunch of things that had brought him security and comfort in his life. Notice how God doesn't simply say go. He says go from. Take a break from. And then God includes some very specific things that Abraham is to go from. He says, Abraham, you are to go from your country. And not only was Abraham's country a place that was familiar, his country was a place that was full of his idols. And what idols are, or idols are basically all of those things that we turn to for security and comfort and pleasure and meaning instead of God. So right here, Abraham is being asked to leave all of those things behind. To leave behind all of the things that used to bring you meaning and comfort and pleasure, and to follow God, to trust in Him alone. You see that? Now God is also calling Abraham to go from your kindred. And this word kindred means similar in kind. Kindred is larger than just a family. Kindred is more like a community or a culture. And when it comes to Abraham's community and culture, God is calling Abraham to go from it. Now don't get me wrong, neither community or culture is our enemy. Because all communities and all cultures are made by people. And since people are made in the image of God, there are parts of every community and every culture that are beautiful because God is beautiful. But because all people are sinful, there will be parts of every community and every culture that will stand at odds with following God. So when God calls Abraham to go from his kindred, there is an element where Abraham is being asked to stand against some of the things that everybody else in his world sees as normal and follow God. Do you see that? And then Abraham is called by God to go from his father's house. Now this one's personal. This one hits close to home because it's one thing to make a break from the things that are happening in the country and in the culture, but here we're talking about family. And when it comes to family, there are connections that run really deep. Isn't that why we often ask about people's family histories? Because there are things in families that get passed from one generation to the next. And not just genes and hairlines, but families can pass down attitudes and patterns and behaviors. And by going from his father's house, Abraham is being called to break some of the patterns and the behaviors of his family and start new ones by following God. And as difficult and uncomfortable and uncertain as it must have been for Abraham to go from his country, to go from his kindred, to go from his father's house, Abraham did it. In verse 4 it says, "So Abram went as the Lord had told him." Now in the book of Hebrews, it summarizes this interaction between God and Abraham like this. It says, "By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive his inheritance, and he went out, not knowing where he was going." This passage here in Hebrews provides a word for what Abraham did when he listened to the call of God and followed him without knowing where he was going. And that word is faith. And the word faith can also be trust, because that is exactly what God is calling Abraham to do, to trust him. I think one of the reasons that God didn't tell Abraham all the details about what he was planning to do through his life is because God was calling Abraham to trust him. Not simply trust a plan, not simply trust an idea, but to trust God. You see, when you put your trust in a plan, when you put your trust in an idea, those are just means to an end. But when you put your trust in an individual, that's a relationship. And when God called Abraham, he called him to trust him. And by doing so, God invited Abraham into a relationship with him. Now, I believe that in the same way that God called Abraham, he calls each one of us as well. God calls us to enter into a relationship with him, to put our faith in him, to trust him. And like Abraham, That call may mean that there are some things in your life and in mine that God is calling us to go from, to break away from. Just like Abraham was called to go from his country, maybe there are some things in your life and mine that we need to leave behind. Like Abraham's idols, maybe there are some things in your life that you are turning to in place of God. And we need to answer God's call and trust him and leave some of those things behind. So in your life, are there things that God might be calling you to leave behind, to cut off, to break away from? Because just like Abraham was called to follow God and trust him, part of that trust involved leaving some things behind. Like Abraham was called to go from his kindred, maybe there are some things that are going on in the communities and the cultures that we are a part of, that though everybody else is doing it, though everybody else is okay with it, though everybody else considers it to be normal, there are some things, for the sake of trusting God, that we are being called to stand against. Now, what I'm talking about here, standing against, I'm not talking about hot takes on Facebook. I'm talking about there might be some things where in the world that we live in, everybody else thinks it's fine, everybody else thinks it's normal, everybody else is okay with doing it, but as for you and your personal convictions, for the sake of trusting God, this is something that I will not do. Are there anything happening in your life and in your community and the circles that you run in that for the sake of trusting God you need to stand against? And then finally, like Abraham was called to go from his father's house, maybe there are some things in your life and in your family that you need to start new. Maybe there's some patterns that need to stop, some cycles that need to break, some behaviors that need to change, and maybe all of this begins with you. Are there anything in your family, in your life, in your what's going on in your personal history that starting today that you need to be, for the sake of trusting God, say, hey, for me and my family, we need to start this because it's never been here before, so we're going to be the ones that break it. We're going to be the new generation. Starting today, we're going to start something new. I don't know what that looks like. Maybe it's making church a priority. Maybe it's reading your Bible. Maybe whatever it might be. But maybe in your family, you're being the one called to start something new for the sake of trusting God. Because like Abraham is called, I believe we too are called. Called by the God of Abraham, who, as we've seen today, doesn't avoid messy people. But he comes right into the middle of their life and he says, I pick you, I choose you, I call you. And this God of Abraham, he is a God who not only comes into our mess, but he makes promises and he keeps them. And for us today, the God of Abraham who calls us, maybe for the sake of putting our trust in him, there are some things in our lives that we need to leave behind, stand against, or start anew. Did you see that this morning? Let me pray for us. God, we thank you for the truth of your word and for explaining to us why we have it, that in these interactions that you've had with real people long ago, you have gone to great lengths to pass them down to people like us so that through them we can be instructed. And God, I pray that as we study through the life of Abraham, you would instruct us. Instruct us and show us and teach us what you were like. Show us what we are like. And show us how you relate to people like us. God, I pray that today, as we've looked through this passage, this interaction with Abraham, it would be confirmed in us that you are a God who is not afraid of our mess, but you come right into the middle of it. And you didn't leave us there, but you started to change that and fix that and do things with our messes, that you are a God who made us promises and keep those promises. And God, I pray specifically that this week, through the power of your Holy Spirit, you would gently show us some of the areas in our lives that you are calling us to leave behind, to cut ties with, that you are calling us to take a stand about, that you are calling us to start new. And God, I thank you that you are a God who not only came to get us, but you are a God who loves us so much that you sent us Jesus. That even when we were still sinners, even when we were turning our back on you, you loved us so much that you sent Jesus into the middle of our sinful mess to take care of it, to die for things that we did, to clean up a mess that we created. God, we thank you that in his death on the cross, we were forgiven of our sins And through his resurrection, we are guaranteed to be part of your family and have an eternal inheritance as sons and daughters of you. We thank you and pray all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.